This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The great musical Guys and Dolls opened on Broadway 50 years ago today. It was based on a Damon Runyon story about gamblers and showgirls. In commemoration, the Museum of the City of New York is presenting an exhibition of photos and archival material reflecting the subject and era of the show. Guys and Dolls was filled with great songs, such as If I Were a Bell, I've Never Been in Love Before, and Luck Be a Lady. The songs were all written by Frank Lesser, who also wrote the songs for the musicals How to Succeed and The Most Happy Fella. Early in his career, he worked as a lyricist in Hollywood, where he was matched with Hoagy Carmichael. They co-wrote Heart and Soul and Two Sleepy People. Lesser was soon writing words and music for movies. We're going to hear an interview with his oldest child, Susan Lesser. She was born during his first marriage when he was living in Hollywood. Let's start with the title song from the original cast recording of Guys and Dolls, which was recently reissued.
Yes, sir, when you see a guy reach for stars in the sky, you can bet that he's doing it for some doll. When you spot a John waiting out in the rain, chances are he's insane. There's only a John can be for a Jane. When you meet a gent paying all kinds of rent for a flat that could flatten a Taj Mahal, call it sad, call it funny, but it's better than even money that the guy's only doing it for some dough. When you see a Joe saving half of his dough, you can bet they'll be minking it for some dow. When a bum buys wine like a bum can't afford, it's a cinch that the bum is under the thumb of some little broad. When you meet a mug lately out of the jug, and he's still lifting platinum fal de ral, call it hell, call it heaven, it's a probable 12 to 7 that the guy's only doing it for some doll.
I spoke to Susan Lesser in 1993 after the publication of her memoir about her father. I love some of the stories of Frank Lesser working with singers. Tell us a little bit about the audition for Guys and Dolls and what he had the singers do as they auditioned.
Oh, he had them yell for help. And they wouldn't understand what he meant. And he'd say, yell help. That's what I mean. He wanted to hear how loud they were. His motto was, loud is good. He wanted the audience to hear every word and every note from every seat in the house. And he wanted no embellishments. He wanted his music sung note for note and loud.
In the movie version of Guys and Dolls, Frank Sinatra played the role of Nathan Detroit. And your father, the composer Frank Lesser, did not like what Sinatra was doing with Lesser's songs.
No, he didn't.
Why didn't he like it?
Well, Nathan Detroit is a very rough character, a Broadway character. And the original Nathan, Sam Levine, couldn't sing. He only had one song, Sue Me. And he came in wrong all the time on the first note. So my father had to write him a four-bar phrase, call a lawyer, and if you listen to it, I will not sing it. it slides up to the correct note to come in on. That was how bad Sam sang, but he was also brilliant and wonderful and rough and tough and Runyon-esque, whereas Frank Sinatra was very smooth and crooned his songs. And in fact, Goldwyn had my father write three more songs for Nathan in the movie, for Frank Sinatra. And my father would listen to Sinatra rehearse and would become angrier and angrier. And finally, they had it out, and my father kind of met his match with Frank Sinatra, who exploded about the same way my father did, both of them screaming words that I won't say on the radio. As it ended, Frank Sinatra, of course, performed the songs his way, and they never spoke again.
Did your father sing around the house a lot?
He sang when he was working on something. More often, he played the piano, working on songs. But yes, he sang too, and he and my mother worked out songs together. There are some wonderful old recordings of them singing Baby, It's Cold Outside and Make a Miracle from Where's Charlie?
Yeah, it's interesting. You write about how Baby It's Cold Outside used to be your parents' song, and they would sing yes. it at parties together until it was actually used in a film.
Right. They and my mother adored that, because they would go to parties, and after the first time they sang the song, they were in great demand, because it was such a wonderful, fun song, and they had such a good time singing it together, and they were very good performers of it. And so my mother felt it was her claim to fame at that time to perform this song at parties. And when he sold it to MGM for a movie called Neptune's Daughter with Esther Williams and Ricardo Montalban, it broke my mother's heart. She was very upset about losing the song. But then it won an Academy Award, so it made up for it.
After hearing your father sing on that Evening With album,
mm-hmm.
I assumed he was from an immigrant family of Jews in New York, probably Brooklyn, maybe Manhattan, probably the first in his family to finish school. And after reading your book, I found out this was not his background at all. Yeah, tell us what his background really was.
My father's father was a music teacher, a Prussian, who was very fearsome. My father came from a family of intellectuals, musicologists, and people who felt that the route that my father chose to go was very low class and very unappealing. They were amused by him, and they didn't think much of him most of his life.
Your life must have really changed dramatically when you were 12 and 13. That's when you moved to New York from Hollywood.
Yes.
Your father's show, Most Happy Fella, opened on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that show that he fell in love with his second wife, Jo Sullivan.
Right.
And left your mother. And your mother was actually involved in introducing Jo Sullivan to Frank Lesser.
My mother did a lot of the casting for The Most Happy Fella. She was co-producer with Kermit Bloomgarden. And when she heard Jo sing, she said, boy, this is a voice. This is a voice and a personality Frank would just love. So she sent Jo to audition for my father, sealing her fate. It was a very hard time for everybody. My brother and I were uprooted from our California suburban lifestyle and brought to New York City. We had visited but never lived here. I went to a new school. I was living with my mother. We were both, my brother and I, living with our mother and nurse in an apartment situation. We at first stayed with friends and then moved to a small apartment. My mother was not happy and was drinking more and more, and I had never lived in such close quarters with her before, and that was when I began to see that she had big problems. Everything changed for all of us. My father was living across Central Park in an apartment of his own and having his affair with Jo, and everybody was, he wasn't real happy either. It was a time full of turmoil. Although for him, I think it was mitigated a great deal by the great success of The Most Happy Fella. I think, you know, for him, that show was so important. He wrote not only the music and the lyrics, but he wrote the book. And he was involved day to day with every aspect of it. To Joe Anthony, the director's great consternation. My father attempted to direct it as well.
Well, you write that when your father left your mother, when your mother was 40, that your mother lost her man, her lifestyle, and her status.
Mm-hmm.
Did she ever recover from that?
No, she never did. She never did. She used to say that my father fired her because she had worked for him for so long. And that was all very funny and clever, but she never recovered. She never was reemployed by anyone. She tried to make it on her own as a producer. She had flop after flop. And eventually, she had terrible health problems, which were exacerbated by her drinking. And she died lonely and alone. It was a very sad life. She rejected the friends who didn't reject her in the beginning. The people who stayed with her, she one by one rejected them, threw them away, and was a very lonely, bitter person.
When you were growing up and still living in the same house with your father, did you ever eavesdrop on him while he was writing a song?
Well, I didn't really have to eavesdrop. He had a little organ in his room, and I would stop there on my way down to breakfast because he was a very early riser, and he would already be deep at work. But I didn't see it as work. I didn't know what he was doing. He would be playing a phrase over and over again on the organ, and then he would get up and pace for a while, and then he'd sit in his chair and smoke 7 or 8 cigarettes and drink some more coffee and get up and play some more music. And I'd say, "What are you doing?" And he'd say, "I'm working."
Right.
And, you know, that was another one of those surreal mysteries to me.
Is there any song that you feel particularly a part of because you were either with him while he was writing it, or you heard it ringing through the house, or he told you about it, or...
I think the song of his that means the most to me is a very small, short song in Guys and Dolls, and it's called My Time of Day. And it's a poem. It's an ode to New York at 4 in the morning when the street lamps light the gutter with gold. It was a song that Skye Masterson sings to Sarah Brown, and it really characterizes my father, I think. I think that he liked that song the best in that show, and to me, that song is my father.
Well, Susan Lesser, it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for talking with us.
My time of day is the dark time. A couple of days.